Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Gnar Trees podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book, When a Loved One Wants Seek Mental Health Treatment by C. Alec Pollard and an interdisciplinary team is a practical mental health and family self-help guide for people living with the painful reality of treatment refusal. Many families feel trapped when a relative has significant symptoms, yet declines therapy, medication, or evaluation, and everyday life becomes organized around preventing crises. The book addresses this dynamic directly and reframes it in clear, non-judgmental terms, describing recovery-avoidant behavior rather than blaming the person or the family. Its central purpose is twofold: to help families promote conditions that make recovery more likely, and to help them reclaim their own stability and well-being even if the loved one does not immediately engage in care. Grounded in clinical experience and established behavior change principles, the authors present the family well-being approach, a structured roadmap that emphasizes preparation, consistency, and healthier interaction patterns. The result is an action-oriented resource for families, and also a usable framework for clinicians working with complex treatment avoidance. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, understanding the family trap and recovery-avoidant behavior. A core idea in the book is that treatment refusal rarely affects only the identified patient. Over time, the household can fall into a family trap where routines, roles, and decisions revolve around preventing blow-ups, reducing discomfort, or keeping the peace. In that trap, family members may gradually give up normal expectations or personal goals, not because they want to, but because the immediate cost of conflict feels too high. The authors use the term recovery avoider and recovery avoidant behavior to describe patterns that are inconsistent with getting better, without assuming the person is simply stubborn or manipulative. This language shift matters because it reduces moral blame and helps families observe behavior more accurately. Once the behavior is defined, the family can start analyzing what unintentionally maintains it, such as repeated rescuing, removing responsibilities, or accommodating routines that shrink the person's world. The book positions this understanding as the starting point for change before trying to persuade a loved one. Families benefit from seeing the full system at work, including how fear, exhaustion, and crisis cycles shape everyone's responses. Secondly, respites. The family well-being approach as a structured family-centered framework. The family well-being approach is presented as an evidence-informed, step-by-step framework that helps families shift from reacting to symptoms to acting with intention, rather than focusing solely on getting the loved one into treatment. The approach emphasizes restoring the health of the family system, clearer boundaries, more consistent responses, and a daily life that is not entirely organized around the illness. This is not a call for harshness or withdrawal. It is a method for choosing responses that are sustainable and that do not reinforce recovery-avoidant patterns. The framework draws on established behavior change principles and family interaction research, and it is designed to be practical for real households where stress is high and trust may be low. A distinctive feature is sequencing the family prepares emotionally and strategically first, then implements change in a coordinated way. That preparation includes aligning caregivers, anticipating pushback, and deciding what the family will do consistently. By treating family well-being as a legitimate goal, the approach helps relatives move from helplessness to agency while still holding empathy for the person who is struggling. Thirdly, reducing unhelpful accommodation and enabling while preserving compassion, families often make accommodations to reduce distress in the moment, taking over tasks, smoothing over consequences, or adjusting household rules to prevent escalations. The book highlights that some supports are appropriate and humane, while others can unintentionally perpetuate dependency, entitlement, or avoidance. The practical challenge is that accommodation frequently begins as love and crisis management, then becomes an entrenched pattern. The authors encourage families to differentiate between care that supports functioning and care that removes incentives or opportunities to practice coping and responsibility. This is a nuanced message. It does not ask relatives to stop caring, but to stop doing things that keep the loved one stuck. In many cases, change requires the family to tolerate short-term discomfort, including guilt or fear, in service of long-term stability. The book also emphasizes that reducing accommodation works best when paired with clear communication and consistency across family members. When relatives act as a coordinated unit, they're less likely to be split into good cop and bad cop roles, and the loved one receives a more predictable environment that can support healthier choices. Fourthly, communication that avoids blame and opens the door to change. When someone refuses mental health treatment, conversations can quickly become polarized. The family pushes, the loved one defends, and both sides feel misunderstood. The book stresses communication that is calm, respectful, and non-judgmental, with an emphasis on describing observable behavior and its impact rather than assigning motives. This style aligns with the book's broader shift away from labels like controlling or resistant. Instead of trying to win an argument about whether the person needs help, Families are encouraged to focus on what the household will and will not do, how they will respond to specific situations, and what support they can offer if the person chooses recovery-oriented steps. Effective communication in this context is also strategic. The goal is to reduce escalation and preserve enough connection that opportunities for help can be accepted. The authors highlight that families often need to practice these skills because stress and history can make even simple conversations volatile. Clear messaging, consistent follow-through, and attention to tone can help reduce cycles of confrontation and can make it more likely that offers of evaluation, therapy, or other supports are heard rather than reflexively rejected. Lastly, balancing crisis management with long-term recovery promotion. Households affected by serious symptoms can become stuck in emergency mode, where every plan is temporary and every day is about preventing the next crisis. The book acknowledges this reality and emphasizes the importance of balancing short-term safety planning with long-term behavior change. Crisis management alone can inadvertently strengthen recovery avoidance if it repeatedly removes consequences or reinforces the idea that the family will always absorb the fallout. At the same time, ignoring risk is not an option. The authors approach this tension by helping families plan ahead, identify predictable flashpoints, clarify what actions the family will take, and decide how to respond in ways that are safer and more consistent. They also discuss creating opportunities for recovery through support, incentives, and positive rewards, emphasizing that these strategies work best when the family is prepared to follow through. This balance helps families move from reactive rescuing to proactive structure. Over time, such structure can reduce chaos, protect caregivers from burnout, and create a clearer path for the loved one to take small steps toward evaluation or treatment when readiness increases. In conclusion, this book is best suited for partners, parents, adult children, and close friends who feel trapped by a loved one's untreated mental health condition and are searching for guidance that is both compassionate and practical. It also fits clinicians who want a family-centered framework for situations where the identified patient refuses care or drops out quickly. Readers can expect two major benefits. First, the family well-being approach validates the exhaustion and confusion families experience while offering a structured plan to regain stability, reduce unhelpful accommodation, and communicate more effectively. Second, it reframes the problem in a way that preserves dignity. Recovery-avoidant behavior is treated as understandable and changeable, rather than as a character flaw, which helps families respond with steadier empathy and firmer consistency. What helps the book stand out in a crowded mental health self-help category is its explicit focus on the family system as the primary lever of change when the loved one will not participate. Instead of promising quick persuasion techniques, it emphasizes preparation, follow-through, and reclaiming the household's well-being as a legitimate goal. That combination makes it useful even when treatment engagement is slow, uncertain, or repeatedly refused. If you would like to support C. Alec Pollard, PhD, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.